This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Ed Murphy is an astronomer at the University of Virginia and joins us periodically on this program. We always look forward to it. How are you, sir?
Good. How are you?
I'm very good. You teaching this semester? What do you got going on?
Yes. Introductory astronomy, again, for non-science majors, the second part of the stars, galaxies part of the course. And then next semester, I'll be teaching the night sky and solar system.
Very cool. Yeah. And this class involves a lot of looking through telescopes. Because there's not a – UVA doesn't have a planetarium, right?
That's right. We don't have a planetarium. We do have the observatory. And the students are required – my students are required to go up to the observatory at least once during the semester to look through the telescopes to see with their own eyes what we're studying in class.
Yeah, yeah. When's the next open night up there where the public has access to the telescope?
It'll actually be this Friday. It'll be the Friday in November. So we'll be open from 7 to 9 p.m. on Friday. And weather permitting, you'll get to see something.
Good stuff. And, of course there's a lot of stuff. Venus and Jupiter up there, they've been pretty brilliantly at night.
That's right. They're both low in the southwestern sky. So usually we can't do those in public night because they're so low. As you probably remember, the telescope, if we're looking at something low, the back of the telescope is way up off the floor. And then in the dark, people are climbing up the ladder. So we try not to look at them when they're low like that.
Yeah. We're talking with Ed Murphy, astronomer at the University of Virginia. Let's start, of course, with what people can see tonight without a telescope. They can go outside tonight and see something pretty cool.
There's a great pass of the International Space Station with the Space Shuttle Endeavour docked to it that'll be going right over central Virginia this evening, just after 6:12 this evening.
And that is, it's a little bit brighter than normal because the space shuttle's up there with it, right?
That's right. Yeah, it'll probably be at least twice as bright as normal, maybe even brighter than that. So
tell us the nuts and the bolts and how it works and how somebody can go out and see this thing. Because it's actually pretty cool. I've seen a pass. It's pretty neat. When you see it, you're like, oh my gosh, there it is.
There it is. And then as it passes overhead and you just look at that little dot, think to yourself, there are 10 people inside of that thing traveling 17,500 miles an hour.
Oh my gosh.
So it's really an amazing thing to see.
So tell us how it works.
So go out tonight just after 6:12 in the evening. You should probably go out 5 to 10 minutes earlier just to get your eyes adapted to the dark. Face towards the southwest, and you'll see beautiful Venus is the brighter of the two, and the planet Jupiter is to the upper left of Venus. And just keep looking over to the right of Venus, and just after 6:12 in the evening, you'll see a faint star come moving up out of the horizon, and it will get brighter and brighter until it becomes by far the brightest thing in the sky tonight. And then it will pass almost straight overhead at about 6:16 this evening, and then a minute later it will disappear.
So it'll disappear a little bit overhead. It's not going to go down in the northeastern sky.
That's right. It's going to go down a little bit into the northeastern sky, but not all the way down to the horizon. It will disappear actually as it passes into the shadow of the Earth. The space station is visible to us because they're still in daylight while we're having nighttime down here. So it's just reflecting sunlight down to us. But as they continue their orbit around the Earth, they'll pass into the shadow of the Earth just after 6:16 this evening. And you'll notice that as it passes into the shadow of the Earth, it gets almost orange in color as the sun sets. So they're actually experiencing a sunset on the space station. And then it will disappear.
Very cool.
It is.
And there's 10 people up there.
There's 10 people up there. And while you're looking at it this evening, there are actually two astronauts outside who are walking in space, working on one of the big solar array joints on the International Space Station.
Are they doing that now, or they're going to be between now and then they're going to go out?
They're already out right now. So they were supposed to go out about 2 o'clock this afternoon. And they'll be out there for 7 hours.
So when we see that pass tonight, somebody's walking around outside of it.
Two of them. Two people. That's right.
And 17,500 miles an hour?
Yeah.
Ed, my goodness.
It's amazing, isn't it?
How can they, I don't understand how they can step out of it and not just, like it's stepping outside of an airplane, not just where you would just fly off of it.
Well, of course, that's the thing with an airplane. It's the wind resistance with an airplane. If you step outside of an airplane, it's because the wind resistance will blow you backwards because the wind's not moving, but the plane is. But if you were flying a plane like that and there was no wind resistance and you jumped out of the airplane, you'd actually keep up with it. A classic question they ask in introductory physics classes, if you're the bombardier on an airplane, do you drop the bomb when you're over the target? And the answer is no, because if you drop the bomb when you're over the target, the bomb continues with your forward speed. By the time it hits the ground, it's moved well beyond the target. You have to drop the bomb before you get to the target because it's moving with the same speed that the airplane is.
Ah.
So
you drop it before?
Before you're over the target.
Interesting.
That's right.
Gosh. So tonight, after go out when this show is over.
That's right.
At 6 o'clock, get used to the, because it'll be dark then.
It'll be dark.
Get used to the night sky. And we should have good viewing tonight, you think? It's not going to be too cloudy?
They're calling for partly cloudy skies, but I hope it'll be so bright that we should easily see it between gaps in the clouds.
Okay. And that's the International Space Station with the Space Shuttle Endeavour, right?
And Space Shuttle Endeavour attached to it. They're docked together right now.
And fill us in on the, before we go to a break, what's the Space Shuttle doing up there?
The Space Shuttle is on a mission to re-outfit the interior of the space station to get it ready to hold a crew of up to 6 people beginning next May.
So they're busy. I had heard they're in like a new bathroom and a new bedroom.
A new toilet, 2 new bedrooms going on board, a new galley going in as well that has the first refrigerator that they'll have for food on the International Space Station.
Ed, are they literally adding on space to it or changing space that already exists?
This is like one of those home remodeling shows. They're actually changing the interior of the place. And the reason is right now, the best quote I heard about it is right now it's a 3-bedroom, 1-bathroom space station. And they're upgrading it to be eventually be a 6-bedroom, 2-full bathroom with a new kitchen. So
the bedrooms that exist are getting smaller?
Actually, we've only got 3, and the goal next May is to try and move to a full-time crew of 6 people. So they need to add 3 bedrooms, another bathroom. They need to improve the kitchen. But the most important thing that they're doing is installing a water recycling system. And that's going to take the problem that we have with the space station is carting water up there. Human beings need a huge amount of water, and they're installing a system to actually recycle the water on board.
So right now they just take up bottles of water, I guess.
It's containers of water, yeah. Big tanks of water. That's right, and that water is used for everything from bathing, what little bathing you can do, mostly to rehydrating food. It's used in a variety of purposes on board the space station, and then when people excrete that water through urine or through sweat, it's collected on the space station and then eventually discarded or thrown overboard. But they would like to start recycling that because that turns out it's the biggest limit to how many people we can have on the space station at one time.
Is water.
That's right.
And is that doable to recycle the existing water?
They've sent up 2 big racks that will take the urine and the sweat and the condensation that comes out of the space station, and it will sanitize it and filter it and clean it and recycle that water.
And you could actually drink it?
That's the plan.
Oh, my goodness.
It's actually an absolutely crucial step to going to the moon and Mars, because when we go to the moon and Mars, there won't be water available on the trip there.
You can't stop by a 7-Eleven and pick up a bottle of water.
And unlike the space station, you can't just keep carting it up there. Water's heavy and expensive to move around, to move up to orbit. But going to the moon and Mars, you absolutely have to recycle the water you started with.
We are talking with UVA astronomer Ed Murphy, and we're going to continue this conversation on the other side of this break here at the bottom of the hour for local news and weather. Let's rejoin our conversation with Ed Murphy. He's an astronomer from the University of Virginia and joins us regularly on this program. So the International Space Station, people can see tonight right here in Central Virginia.
That's right.
Just after 6 o'clock, around 6:12.
Exactly.
It'll look like a bright star coming up out of the southwest.
Yep.
Where Venus and Jupiter have been hanging out.
Exactly.
And you can't miss them.
Yep.
They're both up there. Venus is low to the right and Jupiter's up to the left.
Exactly.
And it'll come out of there and go straight overhead.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll be able to see it for about 4 minutes.
About 4 minutes. And when it's straight overhead, it's 212 miles away. So keep in mind you're looking at something that's a little bit smaller than a football field from 212 miles.
Wow. And it'll be like the brightest thing in the sky.
Oh, yeah. 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 It'll be brighter than any star that you've seen before.
So tell us about the International Space Station. This is, today is, you told me, is an anniversary, right?
That's right. Today is the 10th anniversary of the beginning of construction of the International Space Station. On November 20th, 1998, the Russians launched Zarya, which was the very first module for the International Space Station. And Zarya is the Russian word for dawn or sunrise. So it was the beginning of the construction of the space station.
And they continued to add on to it.
That's right. So that first module was paid for by the United States, but built and launched by the Russians. And since then, now the International Space Station has grown from that one module up to a total of 10 modules. 3 of them are Russian. 4 of them are American. There's 1 European and 2 Japanese modules. It's the total weight of everything's almost 662,000 pounds.
And is this money well spent, Ed? Because I know you've told us before that the space shuttle, in hindsight, was a, you know, arguably a big waste of money. But is the space station, you know, money well spent?
I'll put it this way. I think when the space station was planned, they were planning to do all kinds of experiments on board, all kinds of scientific work. And in order to do that required a very large crew for a very long time. And what they've really been struggling with is the cost of building this thing is so high that they've had to cut out a lot of the science and engineering work that was going to go into it. And they can't cut out the basic life support, the things that keep the astronauts alive, the bathrooms, the galleys, the things like that. So we've ended up with a station that's much smaller than people had originally hoped for, that's a lot less capable for doing research. And ultimately, it's going to cost us $100 billion to build this thing in orbit. And at the same time that we're finishing the International Space Station, we are retiring the space shuttle, which is the United States' only means for getting to and from the space station. So
that sort of answers my question.
Yes. And I would say this, that for $100 billion, as a scientist, I would have liked to have seen much, much better returns on our investment. We have not seen very much in terms of science or research come out of the International Space Station.
Just think of the kind of science you can do for $100 billion.
Yes. I mean, a good example was we could build 50 Hubble space telescopes for that amount of money. Instead of one, we could have 50 of them in orbit around the Earth.
Oh, wow.
So.
Unbelievable. We're talking with UVA astronomer Ed Murphy. So what are the long-term plans for this thing? They're just going to keep throwing money at it?
Yes, because the United States has an agreement with our international partners to finish it. There are groups like the Europeans and the Japanese who have no way to launch their heavy modules to the International Space Station, so we agreed long ago to cart those modules up there for them and to bring their astronauts to the station and back again. And that was their contribution was building some of these large modules. Our contribution, besides our modules, was to bring their astronauts and their components back and forth. So we have international agreements that NASA is bound by to finish this thing.
But we're retiring the space shuttle.
As soon as it's finished, we're retiring the space shuttle. Because
so we're going to wait till the space station is done and then retire
it. That's the whole reason that we haven't already retired the space shuttle, is that they have to wait until the space station's complete, because we don't have anything else to do the work that we've promised other nations that we would do.
And very quickly, because I know somebody's probably thinking this, what's going to replace the space shuttle?
There's a new vehicle that's being planned right now called the Orion Crew Exploration Vehicle, and Orion will probably not be ready before 2014 or 2015. And it goes back to the old capsule days. Instead of a flying vehicle like the space shuttle, it will go back to a much simpler but also hopefully much safer capsule.
So with splashdowns in the ocean, that kind of thing?
They're still debating that. The original plan was to bring it down on land so that they could reuse this multiple times. Seawater, as you can imagine, doesn't agree with spacecraft very well. So if it lands in the ocean, generally you can't reuse it.
Then it's going to a museum.
Exactly. And the goal was to bring it down on land. But it turns out a landing on land requires that you put a lot of airbags and things underneath it. And that ended up being so heavy that they're still looking at the possibility and may very well likely end up going back to a splashdown.
We're talking with UVA astronomer Ed Murphy. And real quick, the astronaut who dropped this bag the other day,
yes.
What was this story?
So she was outside working on the space station. One of the solar array joints, the space station it gets its power from giant solar rays. And as the space station orbits the Earth, these solar rays have to tilt and twist in order to track the sun. And it was discovered a few years ago that the solar array joint, the joint that allows this thing to swivel, was misbehaving on one side of the space station. So they sent an astronaut out there who pulled the insulation off, looked inside, and found out that it was full of metal shavings. Some metal component inside was chewing up the bearings that this thing rotated on. So NASA had to do something about that. And they've now found out what it was. It was a lubrication problem. And the lubrication came off too quickly, and this thing started wearing itself out. But now they've got to clean up the whole mess. They've literally got to go in and wipe it clean. So she was out there trying to clean up some of these metal shavings that are on the inside. And the plan had been to use grease guns to put a little bead of grease down and then use that grease to wipe the metal shavings off so that they don't float around. You collect them in the grease. And then once it's clean, you put another layer of grease down to lubricate it. And it went very much like my home improvement projects at home. You look in the bag that you were carrying your caulk guns in, and there's caulk all over the inside of the bag. And so she takes some of these dry wipes, and she starts cleaning the inside of the bag, but it's getting on her gloves, on her hands, so she starts cleaning off her hands. And there's a little bag in the way. So she just literally takes that bag out, and she puts it to the side, And as she puts it to the side, she goes back to her cleaning job, and out of the corner of her eye, she sees this thing floating away, and she reaches for it, but it was already beyond her grasp.
And what's in the bag?
Two of the grease guns that contain the grease that she was using, some wet and dry wipes, a scraper, and then a large trash bag.
So does this little bag that floats away just orbit the Earth forever, or does it burn up, or what?
It'll eventually burn up. It'll probably only it's small and lightweight. It will only be up for a few weeks to a few months before it'll reenter and completely burn up in the Earth's atmosphere.
And we're talking with UVA astronomer Ed Murphy. You would think NASA would have some fail-safes and that nothing like this would happen.
They do. And in fact, as they pointed out, when she got back in, she felt terrible about this. I mean, astronauts are absolutely trained for perfection. Everything they do is rehearsed and trained over and over again. But it's a beautiful lesson in life that you can train for something, but the accidents happen when you're not ready. And she was distracted by the fact that one of her grease guns had leaked and the grease got all over the inside of the bag, and they hadn't trained for that. But it wasn't a big deal. You just clean it up. But in the cleaning process, each and every step hadn't been planned out as to how you clean the inside of a bag. She was just playing, you know, doing whatever you would do to clean the inside of a bag.
Oh, man.
And that's when the accidents happen. It's when you're distracted by something else.
So they're literally going to be studying this at NASA.
Probably. I think it's well known what happened. Each of the items in the bag is clipped inside of the bag. And her fellow spacewalker, who was out at the time, admitted that it was his bag. And when he left, he didn't think to make sure that everything was clipped securely inside the bag.
Wow.
But ultimately, too, I mean, it's gotten a lot of press, but I do want to say that this isn't a world-shattering event on the International Space Station. I mean, it's two grease guns and some wet and dry
wipes. And astronauts, they've dropped plenty of stuff over the years.
They have.
There's a lot of floating junk up there, right?
Well, most of the stuff that these people drop on the space station comes down quickly. I mean, the International Space Station would come down quickly if we didn't constantly reboost its orbit. Because where it is, 212 miles above the Earth, there's still enough atmosphere that the drag would bring it down. And the space station's so big, the drag would bring it down in a period of months.
How do they boost its orbit?
The resupply vehicles that are there, and when the space shuttles come visit, they use the engines on those to boost the orbit. Every few weeks, they give it a little boost to keep it from coming
down. So if we retire the space shuttle, we're going to be relying on somebody else's
vehicle
to go up there and keep that thing up there.
And we already do, because when the space shuttle is not there, the astronauts need some way to get home that are living on the space station. And there's a Russian Soyuz spacecraft that's always docked to the International Space Station. So they often use the thrusters from that. Or the Russians send up these resupply vehicles called Progress, and they use the engines from the Progress vehicles to reboost it as well.
We're talking with UVA astronomer Ed Murphy. So, Ed, fill us in on what's going on Mars, because that made some news recently as well with Phoenix, right?
That's right. The Phoenix mission has finally come to an end, so we've talked about it a couple times. This summer, it landed on May 25th.
There's three machines there, right?
There are three
on the surface.
Robots on the surface of Mars, exactly. The two rovers, Spirit and Opportunity, and then the Mars Polar Lander. And then there's a number of spacecraft that are in orbit around Mars, three or four that are orbiting around the planet.
Are they all U.S. robots?
All the robots on the surface are U.S. robots. One of the spacecraft in orbit around Mars is a European spacecraft.
Okay. So which is the one that the robot that died?
So the Mars Phoenix Polar Lander landed up near the North Pole of Mars in May, and they knew that this lander had a finite lifetime because the winter was coming. It landed in the height of Martian summer. But as the winter came along, they knew the sun would get lower and lower, and the batteries, the batteries are charged with solar rays, they would get less and less power over time. So the original goal was to last 90 days, and it lasted all the way until November 2nd, when finally the lander did not call home, literally. And NASA declared the mission dead at that point.
And this is the one that found found water, literally.
Found water, found ice on Mars, literally. So everything from when it first landed and they looked under the lander, they saw this where the thrusters, as it was landing, had cleared some of the dirt away. They saw this thing that looked very remarkably like a patch of ice underneath it was. To when they used the arm to dig in the soil, they found water there.
Isn't that amazing that we send this robot? How far is that to Mars?
Oh, at its closest, probably 40 million miles. So
we send this tiny little robot 40 million miles to look for ice, and it lands on it.
Yeah.
It lands right on a patch of ice.
That's right. Well, fortunately, it confirms, we think that the whole north polar cap of Mars has ice underneath the soil up there. So
we purposely landed in what we thought was the right
spot
to look.
That's right, because they wanted to study the ice, study the history of the ice, find out how deep it is under the soil, and then look at some of the other interesting things in the chemistry of the soil. One of the things they found, for example, is that the soil is alkaline. It's not acidic. And that would be good for growing plants. I mean, we're not planning to do that now, but at some point in the future.
Good to know.
Exactly. And then other things they found that were surprising in the soil is they found perchlorates in the soil mixed in with some salts. And these are things that aren't necessarily good for you and me, but bacteria can actually thrive on these things. And so now you've got the fuel for bacteria. You've got frozen water underneath the ice. And it keeps raising this question of, could Mars have harbored life in the past? And if it did, where is that life? Where would we go look for it?
Fascinating stuff. What's the and the two rovers are still moving around, although one of them's crippled, right?
That's right. Spirit and Opportunity are still moving around on Mars, although one of the things that happened to Phoenix Lander was that they were hoping that the mission, at the end of October, they were saying the mission might go for 3 more weeks before the sun got low enough that the batteries wouldn't be able to recharge themselves. But a dust storm came in on October 27th, and the dust blocked enough of the sunlight that the lander just wasn't able to charge its batteries. So basically what would happen is the sun would get high in the sky, the batteries would get just enough of a charge to turn everything on, it would try to call home, and that would drain the batteries and shut everything down.
Will it come back to life in the spring?
We won't know till October. The sun will set in April there, and it will be down all the way from April until our fall here on Earth. And then in October, the sun will be high enough that it could recharge. The problem is this. We think in the middle of winter, it will get to about 300 degrees Fahrenheit below zero.
Oh, my gosh.
And it was not designed at all to survive those kinds of conditions.
So if that thing comes back to life at all, it'll be
a huge surprise.
It'll just be a plus. Yeah,
that's right.
Wow. And the other two rovers are still...
They're still going, but Spirit is encountering one of these dust storms as well. And Spirit has had a lot of trouble recharging its batteries. And in fact, just a week ago, they had lost contact with Spirit for 2 days. And they were afraid that it had entered a low power state and was resetting itself. But fortunately, it hadn't. But it is struggling with low power right now.
We're talking with UVA astronomer Ed Murphy. Now, before we let you go, what tell us about this discovery of the exoplanets?
That's right.
This is actually very exciting, is it?
It was
yet to be confirmed, I think, but...
It's pretty good evidence. It's the first time we've ever taken a picture, a visible light picture of a planet around another star. And it's around a star called Fomalhaut, which is 25 light years away. But the beautiful thing about it is it's easily visible. If you're out tonight, about 9 o'clock in the evening, look due south. And Fomalhaut is a moderately bright star that's just above the treetops in the south. So you can easily see it with your naked eye. And with the Hubble Space Telescope...
Is it part of a constellation? Or?
It is. It's the Southern Fish. It's part of the Southern Fish constellation. With the Hubble Space Telescope, they took a picture of this star a long time ago, and they saw that it had a disk of dust around it, little particles of rock and dust. And as they took more photographs with Hubble, they actually noticed a little tiny spot which was slowly moving around the star. And so they believe it's the first time we've ever photographed a planet going around another star.
And it's not the first planet we've seen, but the other ones we've seen hundreds, we've seen indirectly.
That's right. Exactly.
We've inferred that, oh, there must be a planet here because we're seeing stars blink.
Exactly.
So something's moving in front of
blinking
them.
Blinking or, in most cases, wobbling around. We see the stars wobble around as the planet goes around them. We've discovered over 300 planetary systems that way, but this is the first time we've ever taken a visible light photo of a planet.
That is amazing.
Yeah.
And it's a big gas planet, right? These aren't terrestrial planets.
No, that's right. It's about three times the mass of Jupiter, and it's much further.
That's huge.
It is, and it's much further from its sun than Pluto is from our sun. So it's not located where Jupiter is. It's located well over 100 times further from its sun than we are from ours.
Gosh. So it's a big frozen gas ball.
Exactly. Yep. But it's interesting nonetheless.
Yeah, absolutely. UVA astronomer Ed Murphy, and we want to remind you that this coming Friday night is public night.
That's right.
At the observatory up at UVA, and everyone is welcome. It's a free event open to the public. When does that usually start about?
7 to 9 p.m.
7 to 9 p.m. And we also want to remind people that you can see a pass of the International Space Station tonight at 6:12 p.m. It'll start in the southwest and move directly overhead. And it'll be the brightest thing in the sky. You can't miss it.
Exactly.
Thank you, Ed, very much.
Thanks, Coy.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit cvillepodcast.com for more.